Hello and welcome to the All About Windows Phone Insight number 34. I'm Rafe Blanford and I'm joined from Edinburgh by
Ewan Spence. As always, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. And as you may have spotted, Rafe's in the chair and I'm on the other side of the metaphorical Skype table with a little bit marked guest.
That's absolutely right. First things first, I should probably apologise. We've slipped back slightly from our weekly schedule, but there is a good reason for that. And there's a good reason that I'm sitting in the chair this week. And that's because Ewan's been very busy at the Edinburgh Fringe or the Edinburgh Festival. So Ewan, what have you been up to?
Well, it's actually the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. So you were right on both times. For the last 8 years, I've run a daily podcast out of the Fringe, as we call it up here in the short term. A 45-minute chat show every day, four different guests, somebody from the world of stand-up, from theatre, from performance, from music, from the arts, and just generally try and bring a slice of something. It's what, 2,700 acts, 40,000 curtain calls up here in Edinburgh at this time of year, runs for 3.5 weeks. So if you're wondering why the podcast skills are so sharp on the All About Windows Phone, it's because of the Fringe one, because you know, I have to sit there and jam with comedians and do strokey beard theatre stuff, and then occasionally go and review a hip-hop retelling smashdown beatbox version of Othello.
Which is obviously the best version to see it in. So, Ewan, where can people find out more about this Edinburgh Fringe podcast?
Well, twofold. They can go to edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com, or if they go to thestage.co.uk/Edinburgh, because it's a co-production with Britain's longest-running variety entertainment newspaper.
Excellent. So I guess this gives us a good chance to ask, what have you been using your Windows phone for? Because we should probably say that Ewan has to go a bit mad for the weeks at the Fringe are going on, going out, listening to the shows, getting interviews in advance, going to previews and all that sort of thing. And I imagine your smartphone becomes a pretty invaluable companion, Ewan.
It is, yeah. I mean, it turns out to be something like a 19 to 20-hour day. So there's 3 hours of editing in the morning. Then you're out the door at 9 o'clock in the morning and you're back at 1 a.m. the next day, having been out on the road for all that time. So, yeah, phones are important. The weird thing for me has been battery life. Vicky, my wife, also has the Lumia 800. And when she comes out with me to see shows, she kind of runs out of battery by about 2, 3 o'clock and all the warnings are going off. Yet my phone, admittedly, the battery saver app is running all day, can actually go from 9 till 1 the next day without having to take another charge. I can still get the email, still do the web browsing, still look at all the PDFs and SkyDrive and stuff, and it doesn't actually need topped up. So I've come to the conclusion that I have a voodoo battery.
I think you might have given us a bit of a clue earlier when you talked about battery saver there. I think this is probably the perfect illustration of what having an always-on data connection, for whatever reason, it might be a push email, it might be listening to music, it might be getting files off SkyDrive or the cloud or just doing web browsing, does have a real impact on the, you know, the phone's battery life. And there's quite a few things that go in on the background. And, you know, you can think about things like push notifications, email. And there are other things, you know, it's also sometimes about the location stuff that's happening. It does depend what apps you're running. I suspect also there's difference between the phone models. Some of them do have bigger battery lives than battery capacities than others. And, you know, the different screen types and, you know, the different backgrounds can all have different effects on power usage. But it's interesting there, Ewan, you've obviously decided to turn on battery savers specifically to make sure you get through that 20-hour day.
Oh, yeah. That does go without saying, but... And the other thing is, it doesn't then go constantly checking when I'm in the middle of a non-linear retelling of King Lear through a choral choir from Poland. I don't get bing, 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 bing as a Twitter or a Facebook status update comes into the phone. So battery saver also has the knock-on effect that it stops all of that background stuff and alerts going on. It's not constantly checking email. It's not constantly checking Twitter and Facebook. And yes, it helps in battery power, but it also keeps the phone quiet.
And Ewan doesn't know how to turn on the vibrate function on his phone. For everyone that is listening to this and wants to know, just tap your volume buttons and then click in the top right-hand corner of the screen.
Of course, it's not the same. It's not the same because you forget to turn it back on again.
Yeah, an argument for time profiles, perhaps. And maybe that's something we'll see in the future. But one of the things that makes me curious, Ewan, do you not find that some of the functionality goes away if you're not having that always-on experience? Or are you deliberately going and checking for email at fixed times or, you know, the equivalent on social networks?
The advantage of having a button to press to check for email is you know that it's up to date. If you're leaving for push email, yeah, you know, it's always there and you could have it set for 5 minutes or 15 minutes or 30 minutes. But I know that when I press that button, I am up to date with my mailbox and I can put it away. So when I come out of a show, bang, I know what's turned up. I know that I've answered everything if I need to, and I can go away again. Not so much, strangely enough, from the social profiles. I'm, you know, getting at replies and everything in from Twitter. They're nice, but they're not a core part of the job that I'm doing. A lot of, I mean, I record about 100 interviews up here, so there's about 110 interviews need to be set up, and every PR wants to have your phone number and the email address, and then you need the coordination of meeting up and everything. So there's a lot of information flow back and forward. Being in command of when I hit that sync button and when I can receive and reply, it actually helps the time flow. I can go, well, I'm now going to spend 10 minutes answering the emails that I need to, and at the end of that 10 minutes, I'll stop. You know, and that's actually quite empowering. And anybody who's followed things like the GTD principles or time management flow will understand when you have a fixed time to do something and you have a solid start and an end, it's far easier to manage.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here shocked that Ewan hasn't got the confidence to rely on his push email, which I always have on my phone. But I think it's a good example of how in different situations people use their phones in different ways, and one shouldn't always assume that the way someone wants to use a phone is kind of the standard configuration or the right way to do things.
And it's not confidence. Confidence, I understand why that word is chosen, but it's more a case of how I am working for these 3 weeks. Push email is not a necessity. And you know, the Fringe is a very strange place to go. I mean, if you think about the number of acts there that are going up alone, you've got to get around all of them. It needs a different way of workflow. And I've got a pattern that's been developed over 7 or 8 years that allows me to get around as many shows as possible, to do as many interviews as possible, to get the news as fast as possible, and it works. Now, should I change that because I've got a new nifty feature on my smartphone? Or should I use my smartphone as a tool and be in charge of the smartphone with everything else that works? I've went for the latter.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. People sometimes need to remember it's better to have a phone that works with them rather than them work with their phone. One thing I did want to bring up, Ewan, before we move on to kind of some discussion topics, was one of the things I know has been a pain point in the past is kind of getting this stuff into your phone in terms of calendar appointments, but also documents that you need to take with you. You've often had to sync them across or copy them across to a Symbian phone in years past, or even take paper copies with you. I know you still rely on a Filofax much of the time.
Oh yeah, still got paper copies. Don't trust anything.
I'm curious. Do you now have a digital copy of your diary, and you use the cloud feature, if you like, a Windows phone to kind of get around some of that pain? So, you can do it on the web, on your desktop, or put it into SkyDrive, and it's there immediately accessible on your phone. Is that something you found useful?
Not on the diary, but yes, on the paperwork and documentation. I have, again, the diary system is something that I've built up over the years that I know works, and it's basically 2 full pages for each day. And because there's, yes, you could use Google Calendar and you have a little line of text, but you can get so much more written down on an actual written line of text with a pencil. You can do score outs, you can do keys, marks, letters. It's far easier to just look at a page and see a big long list of line, and I can grok so much more out of that than if it was on Google Calendar or a Hotmail calendar or Live, Outlook, Diary, whatever they're calling it nowadays. This is where confidence comes in. I don't have the confidence that it will work 100% every single time I need to look at the diary. I might not be in coverage. Edinburgh's notoriously bad for coverage, and you're struggling to maintain an EGP or a signal here up on some networks. Wi-Fi is spotty at best around the university campuses because of the buildings and the nature. And every single theatre which has been put up, there's about 270 of them, it's essentially a very small Faraday cage because of the way they're built with lights at the front and the back. And they've been squeezed into a church hall. You can't rely on a mobile signal around Edinburgh. You're okay for voice, but for a good solid data work, syncing calendars, it's not there. Where it has come in useful, though, is PDFs. Almost every PR person, almost every act up here has a press release. And because my name is on the distribution list, I think I have a copy of every single press release. So the ones that I want to interview that I've been interested in, since about the end of May, I've been saving off into a folder on the PC, and that folder syncs up to SkyDrive with the Windows client. Now, I don't have to do anything to do that. I just save there, it's done, save there, it's done. But it means that when I come to do an interview or I stumble over somebody and say, right, let's just do this interview now, not 3 days down the line, I can go up, SkyDrive, and the PDF reader on the handset is there, and I can immediately just quickly scroll through the details and know where I'm going. Yes, I could print them all out, but I'd be looking at, what, 6 reams of paper? That's not practical.
And presumably, because it's slightly less mission critical in terms of having access to documents, not having a connection in some cases or just having an edge connection in others is something you can kind of live with that. But obviously, that doesn't apply to the calendar.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, there are a couple of places that I like to do interviews that I know I have Wi-Fi coverage in, for example. But it's also the fact that because I've been doing that as part of my workflow since May, I know that they're there. I don't have to think about, if I copy that PDF up. If I had a PD, it's been saved off, it's been synced, it's there.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm sure we've managed to shock some of the audience by revealing that Ewan is still using a Filofax yet.
They all know and laugh and point, but you know what? It's got a lovely leathery smell, and until Windows Phone can manage that, you know, it's not going to be quite perfect.
Okay, well, thank you, Ewan, for giving us your highlights of the Edinburgh Fringe there. I think we'll move on to some more Windows Phone Direct topics, and there's some big news coming up. We're all sort of anticipating now.
I know this one.
Oh, what is it, Ewan?
They're changing the name of something to Brian.
No, we'll get to that later. Right, I think right. We'll do the big topic first, and that, of course, is the upcoming Windows Phone 8. We had the preview earlier in the summer, but we're now kind of starting to get quite a lot of hints that there's lots of things going to happen in September, October, and November. And the first one of these that's actually broken cover, if you like, is a Nokia event that's going to take place on September the 5th in New York. We will, of course, be there reporting live from the event, bring you all the lowdown. We don't know what's going to be announced yet, but I think it's a pretty fair bet that we will see Nokia's first Windows Phone 8 devices. So I guess the question to ask here, Ewan,
is what
do you expect to see or hear?
I expect to see my living room in Edinburgh.
I walk right into that one. Thank you, Ewan. So what I really want you to answer is, what do you expect Nokia to announce?
I expect, obviously we're expecting at least one Windows Phone 8 device. I don't know if we'll maybe see two or three. My gut feel is that we will see one device along the lines, shape and size-wise, of the Lumia 900. I think that because it's an American-based launch, it's going to be a phone that looks good to the American market, to the American media, to the American blogosphere, which means it is going to be a reasonably big-sized screen, which means that we're looking more at 900 than 800. I think beyond that, we're going to see a black slab with some curved glass edges, Corning Gorilla Glass. It's going to look very, very similar to what we've already got just now. Nokia have a really strong industrial design, and we have to remember that this sort of curved edges pillow design, you know, goes right the way back to the Nokia N8 back on Symbian as well. They're going to use this design again. It's their design language and what they're recognized for. So externally, I think we're just going to see more of the same. Internally, I think we have to assume that we're going to see dual core, because Nokia really can't afford to fall back even further on a single core, even though we know it would work in single core. I think we're going to see a much improved camera. I think that's the biggest letdown of the Lumia range so far, is that we don't have as impressive a camera suite or output as we do on Nokia's Symbian devices. So I'm expecting to see very good optics in there. Whether it's PureView or not, I don't know. Sort of watching the media, given that we're assuming that there's going to be an Apple event the week after, they're going to want to have a big gun there. So I think 30% will have this as a PureView device, which is their increased and enhanced camera technology. Obviously, we're going to see the major pieces of Nokia's software bundle moved over. Nokia Maps is probably going to be coming up here on Windows Phone 8. What we won't see is a fixed release date. I think we will just get it will be available sometime before the end of the year, and I don't think we'll get a price. And yeah. I think the latter one there is going to be a big problem. For those of you people who've been watching Microsoft and the whole news about the Surface RT device, somebody said, oh, it's going to be $200. And that sort of headline has went round. Now, whether it's $200 or not, it doesn't matter. What matters is Microsoft lost control of that story, of the pricing. I don't think Nokia are in a position to be able to put a price on it at the moment, in the same way that they couldn't put a price on the 900 when they announced it in CES. And I think that's going to lead to a lot more negative speculation. And as that festers, boom, whatever Apple are coming up with, will blast it out of the water. And then no matter what Nokia announced price-wise, people go, but Apple's better value.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I agree with much of what you said there.
What did you not agree with?
Well, I think we will see a price, because pretty much every Nokia launch event I've been to, you know, a price has been mentioned, and usually it's a kind of the price before subsidies and taxes, which gives you an indication of where the price is going to fall, but never gives you a definite answer, particularly in the US where, you know, the pricing is very much dependent on network subsidies. I mean, in a lot of places in Europe, for example, where you do have the bigger operator subsidies, it's going to be free on a contract. And yeah, you know, the higher end devices are going to be on the more expensive contracts. I think we'll also probably see multiple devices, you know, two, three, it's difficult to say, but, you know, looking back to the first Windows phone announcement from Nokia, you know, they had the 800, they also had the 710. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a similar pattern happen, you know, a mid-range device and then kind of the high-end hero flagship device. Yeah, the camera stuff is right. PureView, honestly, I'd be surprised if they get PureView in it that early, simply because, you know, the amount of work required to do that is, you know, significant. And when we talk about PureView, it's probably worth saying it doesn't mean it will be a 41 megapixel camera as it is on the Nokia 808 PureView. That's the kind of the Symbian device. It's quite possible to use the same kind of technology but cut down on the megapixel count, and that might avoid having a big camera hump. So I think that's kind of one of the big questions. You know, what are they going to do there? What are they going to do to stand out? The other thing I expect to hear a lot more about is Windows Phone 8 itself. I mean, it's interesting. It's kind of being touted as a joint Microsoft-Nokia event. Back when we had the preview of Windows Phone 8 earlier in the summer, Microsoft were, you know, quite clear when they said there's a lot more consumer features we still have to announce. I think we'll hear a lot more about them, and so there'll be an emphasis on the software, talking about some of the new features in Windows Phone 8. And, you know, we've heard plenty of hints about it, from, you know, things like it'll be able to take screenshots, to the fact that Nokia Maps is going to be integrated. But there's still plenty of unanswered questions about how exactly all that sort of thing will work. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's a couple of surprises in terms of software that we, you know, aren't expecting. On the hardware side, we pretty much know what we're getting, thanks to that Windows Phone 8 preview event, in terms of increased screen resolution and dual core devices, more memory. There's going to be support for external memory as well. And there's things like NFC coming in, probably increased Bluetooth support. But again, we'll probably be hearing more details about how that actually impacts on consumers rather than the developer angle. And this is just going to be, you know, the first event. This is the Nokia one. And we can, of course, expect to see announcements from the other Windows Phone 8 hardware launch partners, HTC, Samsung and Huawei.
Rafe, I want to go back and pick you up on one thing. You say that we are going to see a price here. Do you remember the N-Gage launch?
I do remember the N-Gage launch, yes. And you're
right.
I'm
glad somebody does.
That was one of the instances where there wasn't a lot of clarity on pricing.
Yeah. What they did was, they came, for those people who are new to this, N-Gage was Nokia's attempt at a gaming smartphone back in 2003, 2004 or something like. When they announced it as the price, which unsubsidized, there will probably be network subsidy, but everybody picked up on the $400-$500 price tag that was attached to it. America expects smartphones to be $100, maybe $150, because almost all of them buy them off a network. If they walk out there and do the unsubsidized price of the Nokia Lumia, will be $599 before subsidy. Every single press report is going to forget that bit that says before subsidy. They're just going to say Nokia sells it at $600. Here comes the iPhone. You can pick it up on contract for $150. So they need to, if they're going to announce the price, it needs to be the subsidized US price. And I wonder if AT&T are going to be in a position to confirm that, or Verizon or Sprint or whoever.
Yeah, it is an interesting question. I think made more relevant by the fact it is being held in the US, you know, are we going to have an operator up on stage saying, yes, we're carrying it and it's going to cost X? Yes, I think the media, there's a danger that it reports it at that moment. I kind of have a little bit more faith in it, but it will be interesting to see. And I think it would be good for kind of Nokia to, you know, open a new chapter there and have a bit more clarity about where it's going to launch and kind of the timing. I think it is worth pointing out that this is going to kind of be the announcement event, and the launch event, i.e. when it's available to consumers, will come later. We don't yet know when that's going to be. I mean, if you follow the pattern of the previous Windows Phone generation of devices, you know, we saw announcements in September and then availability in late October, effectively early November. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that pattern followed, not just by Nokia, but by all the others as well. But we will have a lot more information come September the 5th, and of course we'll be reporting on it in a great amount of detail. But if you do have any particular questions or some comments, please let us know via the site or any of the other feedback channels.
I have a question.
Go on, Ewan.
Rafe, can I go to New York? 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 Rafe, can I go to New York? Can I go to New York? Can I go to New York?
Probably not, Ewan, but we'll have to wait and see. I will be in New York, and actually it does remind me that the last time that Nokia held a launch event in New York was for the Nokia N95, and in many ways that was a smartphone that kind of broke new ground. So I think it might be somewhat symbolic that Nokia have chosen to go back to New York for this event. And, you know, I've said in the past, you know, the Windows Phone device that Nokia have produced so far, in terms of the hardware, they haven't been true Nokia devices. They were kind of, you know, the compal insides or the standard insides, albeit wrapped in a very nice Nokia design and with some Nokia software and apps on the top. This time, Ryan, you know, there isn't that excuse really for Nokia. They haven't had to rush so much. They've had almost the sort of 2-year development cycle. Maybe 18 months is probably a fairer number. But I am expecting a bit more from them. And so in many ways, I would say that this is going to be the first Windows Phone device from Nokia that's gone through the full development cycle. So you know, it's the first proper Nokia Windows Phone device. So I think there's a lot riding on this. You know, people have talked about Windows Phone 8 being kind of the last chance saloon for Nokia. I think it's possible to overemphasize that, and it's never quite, you know, that yes or no, will it succeed, will it fail? It's a bit more complex than that, but there is an awful lot riding on this. And, you know, Nokia have had a pretty torrid time in the last 2 years, and Windows Phone 8 is really, really important to the company. But talking of Windows Phone 8, I just wanted to highlight briefly some of the news we've sort of seen flowing around Windows 8 and Metro UI, apart from the fact, Ewan, we're not really meant to call it Metro UI anymore, are we?
Oh, I have a question then.
Go on.
Can we call it Brian? Can we call it Brian? Are they going to call it Brian?
No, they're not going to call it Brian. No, we haven't actually seen. Yes, I have got that confirmed. It's definitely not being called Brian. It looks like it's going to be called either the Windows Phone 8 style UI or potentially modern UI or some combination of the two. We're kind of still waiting for some final confirmation on that, and both of those terms have been used. But as we've talked about in the past, this kind of Metro UI or this Windows 8 style UI has been sort of spreading, originally starting on the Zune, which was much loved by Ewan. And
actually, then on to, it started long before the Zune.
Well, it did indeed. But the big consumer kind of availability was on the Zune, I think.
Yep. So I was thinking of the very early Windows Media Centers. They had the Metro running as well. And then you had Zune. Yes.
Yep.
So we're both right.
Yes, we are, as always. But of course, this is becoming more important because it's spreading to more of Microsoft properties that we've actually seen in the last couple of weeks. Outlook.com launch, and that's with this new UI style, and also SkyDrive.com has been updated. But of course, the big one is Windows 8 itself, and that has the new look, the new feel with the new start screen and kind of the relegation, if you like, of desktop to just becoming an application. And, you know, the big question in all of this is, what kind of impact is that going to have? Does it play into a Windows Phone at all? I think it's something we'll actually have to wait and see on the answer, because the obvious connection is, well, it looks the same, so people have a similar experience across, you know, all the different platforms or the different web experiences on their computer, on their mobile phone. So in one sense, the question, of course, it's going to have an impact. People are going to see a similarity. But is that a good thing? Are people going to like having that commonality of experience?
Well, I've already talked about on this site about how I think that Microsoft should make hay on this. They have the chance to rename it, and they should just simply run with Windows 8 and create that consistent message. Yes, this consistency is a really interesting one. I think consistency is what people want. I think it needs to be relatively seamless going between the different elements, the desktop, the mobile phone, the media player stroke tablet, even your television and your home console. It can't be a slavishly exactly the same on everything. Even the Zune HD, when you stick it next to Windows Phone 7, and there's not that much difference in terms of time between the design of those devices. The Zune HD had an update over the Zune 30s and 60s, but they were still Metro, but different. And so there will be slight differences in terms of how it interacts with the environment. We're not going to see Windows 8 on a PC, basically a Windows Phone 8 turned on its side and made slightly bigger. So there are going to be changes. It's the consistency of branding that I want to see, and it's the consistency of short branding. I really don't think that we can get away with the Nokia Lumia 999, whatever, Windows Phone 8 powered Windows UI Metro modern UI design smartphone, because that's a really snappy thing, thinks Microsoft's PR department. Windows 8, end of story. What does this phone run? Windows 8. Now, I don't know, people are going to go, oh yeah, but that's not the same as a laptop and everything, but you know what? iPhone runs iOS. You know, an iPad runs iOS. I'm pretty sure that at some point in the next year or two, MacBook Airs are going to run iOS. Look at tablets. It runs Android to the consumer. They have a handset that runs Android. They have a dumb phone that runs Android. What Microsoft need to do here is they need to go, what does this run? Windows 8.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think they just need to use the Windows terminology and then use
assuming
Windows
they stick
phone
with Windows, and I think historically they want to stick with Windows. There's a lot of people, there's again a whole area of discussion on that, but fine, do that, Windows 8. Or Windows Brian, I'm still shooting for that.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what your obsession with Brian here is, but I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and I think there's clearly a range of opinions, and looking at it from the other side, you can say, well, people aren't going to have this common experience because their computer is going to be running an old version, and I think that's, you know, very fair. It's going to take a while before this consistency is actually there. And lest we forget, it's not just about computers and mobile phones. It's also going to be Xbox, so underneath your TV. And I think, you know, the consistency across the web services is particularly important, because that's often going to be the first place that people come across this. And that will kind of be the introduction for some people to it. And yes, it will be a while before Windows 8, you know, gets widespread. On the other hand, of course, Microsoft will sell a lot of copies of Windows 8. You know, it will be in the hundreds of millions within 12 months. And that's bound to have, you know, an impact. You know, even with the large number of smartphone sales we have going on, more people are going to, you know, have that new Windows UI experience on their computers than they're, you know, buying smartphones. But I think the point that people sometimes miss is, yes, it's going to have this consistency of experience, but actually there's also much deeper integration than we've typically seen between the device and the services. You know, cloud is the most obvious example of this. You know, SkyDrive becoming the default save location for Office, for example, means there's going to be a much greater tendency to have your documents available in the cloud. That means they're available on your phone, they're available on the web, they're available on your computer. And, you know, we're seeing settings saved to it, being able to log into your, you know, computer anyway and get the same experience, and having things going backwards and forwards. And we expect to see something similar with the Xbox music experience. Again, that's something we expect to hear more about in the coming weeks. So I actually think it's going to be that consistency of services and that integration of services on the three screen approach, be it TV, mobile phone or computer, that actually is what tells, more so than kind of the look and feel of the actual experience. But we'll be coming back to this one, of course, in the future, once we've had a chance to use it ourselves and kind of it's out in the wild and see what the reaction is. The one thing I will say is I don't expect it to have an immediate impact. This will be something that's a bit of a long burn, simply because people won't get their hands on the devices straight away, be it the smartphones or the computers or the Xboxes. You know, some people will upgrade immediately. Some people have the new Xbox dashboard already. and some people already have Windows Phone devices. But compared to the numbers that don't, they're in a relative minority. And we are kind of now in the waiting period before we have all the announcements start happening. I guess it's the dog days of summer catching up with us. But I know you've been using more apps on your phone, so you know what time it is. Yes, it's time for App of the Week. I think we'll let Ewan go first. So what app's been catching your eyes in the last fortnight since we've had the last podcast?
I'm continuing to hugely enjoy Frida, which is the free ebook reader. Review is up on the website just before the Fringe kicked off. I've talked before in the podcast about how much I've been enjoying the Kindle application, but of course that kind of locks you into Amazon's ebook store. You have to buy all your books from there. There's functionality on other devices, it's not on Windows Phone, so you can't load up your own personal documents, you can't email things to your Kindle email address and have them appear in your Windows Phone handset. You can only see the books that you buy and download from there. Kindle is limited in that respect. Of course, that's what Amazon want to do. Frida, on the other hand, you can read pretty much anything as long as you can get it into the device. And how it does this is it uses the Dropboxes of this world, it uses the SkyDrives of this world. So when you open up the application, you can go look at these services, or you can go straight into the archives of things like the Gutenberg Project, a whole bundle of free to download and read books, and then you pull them onto your device. So although you don't have direct access to the file system, which would be the traditional way of copying your book files over, you can, with a single step up to the cloud, bring them back down onto your device as well. Now, I've got a huge archive of ebooks that I've built up, some from the web, you know, some from buying from other stores. They keep everything in a DRM-free version. And Frida allows me to finally get those onto Windows Phone without having to buy the book again. And it has another strength. It is insanely configurable. Now, that could be a weakness for someone who's just dipping into ebooks for the first time. Like, do I want to use, which font do I want to use? How big a margin do I want to do? How much gaps should there be in terms of point size between the lines? What color should I use? All the different hotspot areas on the screen. So it is quite daunting. I think there's like 50 or 60 different settings that you can tweak, and each one of them will change the look of how your text looks on the screen. But once you fiddle with all of them, once you get it into a place where it looks comfortable and it works, you never need to go into those settings again. And Frida is just really comfortable to use. To be honest, I've been using ebooks since back on the Palm 3 and the Sign Series 3.8. I tried doing ebooks on a 512K device. It's just crazy. But, you know, it's something I'm comfortable with if the application lets me configure it well. Frida's strengths are it lets you use your own books and it lets you configure it very well, unlike Amazon's Kindle application, which I think has two setting options, which is font size and color. Frida, free download, and then do what you want to do with the books. There, it is ad supported though, so if you want to support the author, you can buy a full price one as well. Takes the advert away from the digital screen, but there's no functionalities limited on the free one.
Thank you, Ewan. So for all you ebook fans out there, Frida is a great application. I'd certainly endorse that recommendation. For my app of the week, well, I've had a bit of trouble choosing, so I might see if I can squeeze in two. But the first one I want to talk about was the Times newspaper app. This is aware of reading content from one of the UK's leading broadsheet newspapers on your phone. It's been available for iOS and Android for a little while now. And one of the things it does there, particularly on the iPad version, is kind of replicates the paper in a digital experience. But they've taken a slightly different approach on Windows. So initially, I was a bit disappointed because it kind of was a content reading experience, but didn't replicate the newspaper. But actually, because of the Metro UI or the Windows Phone UI, it actually works rather well. It uses the pivot view and, you know, the Chrome-less feel means it's very easy just to consume content. And so this one actually stood out for me as being a great way to kind of catch up with the news in the morning. I've been using it during the Olympics to kind of get a summary of what happened the previous day at a glance and very quickly. And, you know, I was able to pin a section to my home screen that dropped me straight into the Olympic news. So again, an example of it using kind of the native Windows Phone UI functionality to just add that little bit extra. It probably is worth saying that the Times requires a subscription, either a digital one to the website or one of the apps for another platform, or you're a subscriber to the paper version, in which case you get the digital version. But everyone can try this out because there's a 30-day free trial available. After that, the subscription starts at about £4 a week. But I think it's well worth checking out as an interesting way to do what is effectively a pretty simple app, but rather a good way to consume content. The other app that I wanted to talk about was a little bit more niche maybe, but it's a good example of how the smartphone can be a really powerful tool. And this is Tree Explorer, and there's two versions of this. It's Leaf and Fruit. And basically, it lets you identify trees by answering a series of questions about the characteristics of their leaves or their fruit, as you might imagine. It's actually using what's called an identification key. It's a standard ecology or standard tool for identifying biological entities. And it can be any species. In this case, it's obviously trees. Usually you have to work through a paper list, or sometimes it's done in a flow diagram, and you'll work your way through the questions and get the answer at the end. With a smartphone, it just presents you one question at a time, and then at the end it shows you information about the tree species. You know, there's a description, there's pictures of the fruit and the leaves, and plenty of information there. It's actually designed for use in the US. I've been able to use it in the UK without too many problems, but obviously there are some differences in the trees, so you don't get kind of a universal matchup. But I did like this just because I thought this was a really clever way to use the smartphone. And, you know, obviously a mobile phone is the ideal field companion simply because it's portable. You don't have to worry about losing bits of paper, and it's very easy to use. So that was another tip. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, do take a look. There have been plenty more applications that we've mentioned in the flow section of All About Windows Phone over the last week or so, from things like the Gridlock Car Unblock to updates to some of Nokia's applications. That was a little while back, Nokia Maps. Hopefully we'll talk about that in a future podcast. There's been various Xbox games coming out. Dalton the Awesome was another game that caught our eye. Updates to our favourite Reddit client, Baconit, as well as some other high-profile sort of brand apps from the likes of Glamour and ESPN Radio. So do make sure you keep an eye on the flow section, because that's where we tend to talk in summary about some of the interesting app releases and updates. But I'm afraid that's really all the time we have for this week's podcast. It may be another fortnight before you get the next one done, because Ewan is still in full fringe mode, but we'll certainly be trying to get something recorded before all the big announcements come down. We've got a couple more things we want to talk about, and I suspect we'll do a little bit more looking ahead. But for now, from me, it's goodbye. And from my colleague Ewan, I suspect he's also going to say goodbye in his own unique way.
No, I'm just going to say goodbye as well and realize that I didn't get a chance to mention my favorite flow games. Clowning Around is quite fun if you get a chance to do that. We'll probably review that one up over the next week or two as well. Still enjoying using the GIFGAF application, especially the amount of phone calls I'm having to make to PRs to try and chase down where their people are. And a secondary hurrah, as it were, for the Baconit client, Quindamel, continuing to evolve that one into a really, really good news discovery application as well.
Okay, thank you, Ewan. We'll be back shortly, and thank you for listening.